This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. We are less than a week away from the draft. I love the draft. I was saying this yesterday. I got married 21 years ago, yesterday on the 19th and the 18th. So, and that was the day Peyton Manning got drafted. And I still am amazed that I got married on draft day and didn't know anything that was going on the draft. I was focused on my marriage and my, you know, building of my life, but I was surprised that I got married on draft day and I didn't even realize it, given how much I enjoyed the draft. I didn't always like the draft. I didn't think there was much interest in it when I first saw it on TV. I was late to the cable game as a kid growing up. I mean, we didn't get cable until I was probably maybe a sophomore or junior in high school. So I knew it had been on television before. And then when I finally saw it for the first time, and I saw Mel Kiper for the first time, I found it amazing. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was really neat. But boy, has it really taken off. It has taken off to a point where fans like it, even if they don't really want to do all the research that it takes to follow it, right? They wanted, you know, their team, and maybe they want to do some maybe top five, top, you know, 10 picks. But after that, they don't really want to put in all the detailed work of breaking down tight ends and breaking down offensive linemen and breaking down. But they want, it's a celebration of the future of football and hope for their team. And I think that's what is so attractive to this. The NBA draft is the same thing. If you've ever gone to an NBA draft, it's as ruckus of a party as the NFL draft used to be. When they started doing this traveling road show now, and it's going to be in my city in Nashville, it was in Dallas and Philly, Chicago. There was a part of me that didn't like that idea because I always thought New York was the best place for it. It was a great melting pot of fans that could go watch it. But even that has shown tremendous success for this event. It is on the surface just got teams picking players, and that's it. But is now turned into a party that celebrates the number one sport that we have in the country, and nobody exploits that better than the NFL.
There is no more incredible man on this earth.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so the draft's going to be in Nashville coming up on Thursday. Actually, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the weekend. It's going to be all the rounds, right? But Thursday's the big party, the big show. Josh Rosen at Arizona, he's saying, I'm annoyed by all this uncertainty. And I would be too. All right? You're a rookie quarterback going into your second year, and everywhere you go, is Josh Rosen going to get traded? What are they going to do with Josh Rosen once they draft Kyler Murray? Should they even draft Kyler Murray? Rosen had a terrible rookie year. They don't trust him at court. I mean, it's enough. It's nauseating. And you can only hide from that so much before that kind of stuff just weaves its way into your life, right? You can say, I'm not going to get on my phone. I'm not going to get on Twitter. I'm not going to read the newspaper. I'm not going to listen to radio. But somehow this news always finds it. Listen, I've been in locker rooms for pretty much my whole career. And I will tell you, it's always funny when somebody asks the question of an athlete, and then they go, what do you make of the criticism that this and this and this? And they're like, I don't listen to sports talk radio. I don't read the newspapers. That's all you guys. And then you find out that's wrong, that they do listen and they do read the newspaper and they do know what's being said. And it's always the case. Because one day you walk in and you see certain outfielder yelling at certain columnists because they do read the newspaper, or talk show hosts because they do listen. And one of the things about being Josh Rosen is you're supposed to be going into your year two learning from your mistakes and focusing on things that you did wrong so that you can have a better second season, because you are trying to grow into the role at being a quarterback in the National Football League. I don't know if we've run out of patience for that as a fan base, but there used to be a really big learning curve that we would give guys we knew were talented. We would give them opportunity to grow into the position. One of my first assignments out of school was I was working for this radio station, and I got to cover the New England Patriots under Bill Parcells and Drew Bledsoe. And Bledsoe was drafted number one overall by the Patriots, and Bill Parcells named him the starter day one starter. And when asked about it, Parcells said, I want him to grow into this job, right? The best way for him to learn is to go out and make mistakes and learn from them. I'll never forget this one game. They're playing the Steelers. And Bledsoe, not a very good football team. The Patriots were not a very good football team. And for some reason, the Steelers were playing down to their level. And Bledsoe had an opportunity to get a go-ahead touchdown near the goal line. But when he went for the quarterback sneak, he tucked the ball so far down. He had the ball tucked so far down that the ball never crossed the plane. And the Steelers stopped him. And Parcells made a comment afterwards about that's the kind of mistake he'll learn not to make again. Because he got to experience what it was like to lose a game making that kind of decision. Right? And that's the kind of growth Parcells was looking for in his quarterback. And it started to pay off late in the season. The Patriots started winning a few games and got 5 wins on the year, which for Patriot Nation was an exciting time because it showed that their quarterback was growing and there might be a bright future down the road. And they made the playoffs the next year, losing to the Cleveland Browns. But nevertheless, that is what we used to do with quarterbacks that we would take high up in the draft. We would want to let them grow, make a few mistakes, throw a few interceptions. Peyton Manning was terrible his rookie year, but you never would have said, I'm going to go with somebody else, because you knew you had Peyton Manning, that you knew eventually the talent was going to come through, that the talent was going to shine. You could sense that. You could feel that. Right, Andrew Luck is the same way. Andrew Luck, you knew when he would got in the NFL, he had every tool necessary to become a player in this league. Now let's rewind that to Josh Rosen now. Okay, when you look at that quarterback class that came in last year, who was quote the most quarterback ready coming into the league based on what people like in college and what system they like in college? Who was it? Well, it was Josh Rosen. Right, Josh Rosen was supposed to be the most prototypical quarterback, right, coming out of UCLA, had X, Y, and Z. This is going to translate well into the game. He was the 10th overall pick, and the Cardinals moved up to get him. So they get him. And now Kyler Murray, who's a little undersized, throws a really nice ball, can run like a gazelle, he's going to be a better option for Arizona than a guy that they took last year, moving up to Genom, who's pro-ready, had a tough rookie season. I'm not here to tell you that the verdict is out on Josh Rosen. Maybe he disappears from this league and we never hear from him again. Maybe he lands somewhere else and becomes a Pro Bowl quarterback 4 or 5 years down the road. I don't know. But I know this. This is the new NFL now. We want results and we want them quickly. We want what Baker Mayfield was doing, right? Very rarely does a rookie quarterback lead you to some sort of level of success. But we have seen it a couple of times. We saw it with Dak Prescott. We see it with Lamar Jackson. We see it now with Baker Mayfield. And now Arizona wants that same initial injection of adrenaline at the quarterback position with whoever they're bringing in. In this case, it's Kyler Murray. Right? If I'm Rosen, I'm annoyed too. Because I'm not being allowed to grow? Because if I get traded somewhere else, right, the expectation is going to be in year two that I better produce immediately, and I may need some more growing. Right? Ben Roethlisberger took over the Steelers in his rookie year after Tommy Maddox struggled out of the gate, ended up getting hurt. Roethlisberger took over, never gave up the job again. They went 15-1, but he ran out of gas in the playoffs. He just ran out of steam a bit in the AFC Championship game. Right? Rookies, there's always something about rookies that you better be wary of, that you got to be careful of, because they can always swing right back to being a struggling quarterback at the position. That game, Roethlisberger was outgunned by Tom Brady. At one point, I was hoping Tommy Maddox would come off the bench and play for Ben Roethlisberger. Lamar Jackson last year, same situation, right? Ended up rallying enough for Baltimore to make that score respectable, but still struggled against the Chargers, and they couldn't go to Joe Flacco because the offense had changed dramatically to fit what Jackson did rather than what Flacco did. Rosen never got a chance to sit with Cliff Kingsbury. If he's going to get traded, he's not even going to get a chance to sit with Cliff Kingsbury and work with a quarterback coach, an offensive coach, who's already made a decision on where they want to go. If they go with Kyler Murray, one, they're not keeping Rosen as a backup quarterback. He is valuable out there on the market. Young quarterback with that kind of potential, he is valuable. Trade him to the Giants. Trade him to a team that needs it. But I can only begin to feel what Rosen must be thinking about, thinking, I've just got here, and they're already shipping me away. There's already talk about shipping me out of here because I'm not fitting some sort of scheme and ideal. Or better yet, my team is now in the best position to get the quarterback they really want, which is what they said last year when they got me. I can only imagine how annoying this must be. Now, on the surface in the quote, Rosen says he understands it's a business. But that's the caveat everybody says all the time when they don't, right? Even when they're frustrated and angry and want to lash out at the system, right? Man, I find it annoying, but it's a business. Because they don't want to look like they're crying about their situation. But the reality is, it is frustrating. It does anger you. He's not being given a fair look by the new coaching staff, but the circumstances have befallen on Arizona to get this kind of quarterback. And in a way, you don't fault him for it, but in a way, that's the reality of this league. That they got their quarterback, and in 1 year, they went, nope, we don't want him anymore. Top 10 pick? I mean, think about that. Think of every single quarterback that has come into this league and struggled, that was drafted in the first round, top 10 in the first round, maybe even the top 15 for that matter, you know, however you want to spin that. And just immediately because they have a bad season under a bad coach, immediately it's, well, we got to ship them out of here because that season has allowed us to get another person. Right? It's fascinating to me that Arizona is going to pick two quarterbacks in the top 10 of the draft in back-to-back years. You are supposed to make that decision and lock that in and let that scenario grow. But listen, when you get the number one, when you have the number one pick and you can get the same thing. Remember when Andrew Luck was, I remember people in Denver, I was doing a show in Denver at the time when Luck was going to go into the draft. And I remember arguing with people about suck for Luck. That was the campaign they wanted the Broncos to do so that they would be so bad that they could get Andrew Luck. Because if you can land that right quarterback that you know is going to be successful, you do it. But I always said that is so hard to get 52, 53 guys on an NFL team to buy into. We got to can this year so we can get a quarterback that's better. It's not easy to do. 800-777-2907. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Coming up, making schedules is apparently very, very hard. How hard? The NFL wants to redo, or official wants to redo, the schedule for two teams. Can't, but what is he talking about next on SB Nation AM?
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, shop O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock. Brands you trust like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shock, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. This music is making me want to jump around. What is going on with this? Where are you getting these tunes?
YouTube.
Really?
Probably illegally.
Well, maybe so, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is pretty good.
Right? If it feels good, do it. It's what my grandmother always said.
So the NFL schedule came out on Wednesday night, and there is funny. This is so funny. Making a schedule is really hard. Okay, it is really difficult because here's what you got to do. When you have a stadium, okay, sometimes that stadium is booked for other things. That's how it makes money. It doesn't just make money hosting football games, as you guys know. There are concerts that come to town. There's other events that come to town. So you have to put in the dates. Now, usually these stadiums will leave Sundays free, obviously, and Mondays free, obviously, in the fall for football. But you never know. You may have an opportunity to get a fall concert in there that has to fall on a Saturday, and you don't want a football game the next day because, you know, whatever. There's some things that have to occur. So you have stadiums that will say, well, we can host games pretty much every weekend, but this one and this one. So you put it all into a computer. There's these servers that just run as many variables as possibly can. And there's also, like, you don't want a team to be on the road in three straight weeks. You want to give a bye week to anybody that goes to London. I mean, there's all sorts of variables. We know, we keep hearing about what they are that you want to put into making your schedule. So you let computers do that, and then they just come up with all of these possibilities. There's millions, if not billions, if not trillions of possible schedules. I wish I was a mathematician to give you the actual, you know, tally of possible combinations. I'm sure it's in the quadrillions, given there's 32 teams. But you put the computer to work, and then it spits out a schedule, and there you go. All right. So there's an NFL official who said, "Boy, I really wish we could do a do-over, because both the Oakland Raiders and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a 6-week stretch in their schedule where they play 4 times on the road, and they also serve as a home team for a game in London, and then have their bye." So imagine if you're the Raiders and the Buccaneers, and there is a 6-week stretch in your season in which 4 of those games that you're going to play are on the road. Your only home game is not really a home game. It is a road game in which you are the home team playing in a neutral site, and then your bye week is thrown in there, right? That is an unfair balance, and 2 teams are going to have to go through that scenario. And this is why they wish they could have a redo, but you can't have a redo. This is what's set in stone, and there's really nothing else that you could do about it. Vice President of Broadcasting Michael North telling USA Today, "This is the one that the NFL would love to have back. It's certainly not unusual for an NFL team to have one home game over a 6-week stretch, but when that one home game isn't actually home, this is likely something that the NFL would seek to avoid in the future. I'd love a redo on that one." All right, I'm not going to fault the NFL on this, though. It is hard to make schedules. It's really, really difficult. Again, too many variables, too many things that you want to occur. You're trying to make it fair. You're trying to balance it out so a team is not on the road forever. But at the same time, sometimes these pop up. The San Diego Chargers, they were in a situation, we were talking about this yesterday. The Chargers are in a kind of a similar situation with their schedule, in that they are on the road for a huge chunk of change between early November and mid-December. They have a home game on the 3rd against Green Bay of November, and then they don't return home again until December 15th. In the process, they got a Thursday night game at Oakland, Kansas City, they're playing in Mexico, bye week at Denver, at Jacksonville, and that's a good long distance. But I brought this up yesterday, and I think there is some truth to this. If you gave that schedule and that scenario to the New England Patriots, they would be rightfully angry. And the Chargers should be rightfully angry too. But if you gave that to the Steelers, they would be rightfully angry. Now, I don't know why the Chargers are not saying, "Hey, this is really unfair," but I think it has something to do with their stadium. Because there isn't a fan base that would scream at the top of their lungs for this. Look, people in Pittsburgh would lose their minds if they had a schedule like this. Like, if you had a stretch of games like this, or what Oakland has, or what Tampa Bay has. New England fans the same way. Think about your most passionate fan bases. Think about how angry they would be if their chance of making the playoffs or chance of winning a division was on the fact that they were going to be away from home for a 6-week period of time. Right? They would be outraged. But because of what's going on with the LA Chargers, in which there isn't this fan base screaming at the top of their lungs for it, or at least vocal, it makes it easier to just sort of let go and let through. I mean, unfortunately, I know the computer spit this out for the Raiders, but in a way, who in Oakland is going to complain about this when the team is leaving for Las Vegas in the following year? And is Tampa Bay going to lose their minds over this too? And Pat Donovan, who's going to join us from WDAE next hour, he might have something to say about it. But again, if you were to give this to the Giants or some other team that's got a little bit more of a vocal fan base, I think you would hear it. But I tend to go easy, as I said earlier, I tend to go easy on schedule makers because this schedule making is hard. There used to be, there was a documentary done, like a 30 for 30 short on this. Do you watch 30 for 30, by the way, Jacob?
I've seen 30 for 30s, not like on a regular basis.
There was one about this couple, like they live in like Cape Cod or Nantucket or whatever, and they used to make baseball schedule forever, right? And they would make baseball schedule, and it was all on an independent contractor basis. And then Major League Baseball decided to let computers do it, and they took basically the job away. But the documentary was fascinating because they did this by hand. They did an entire 162-game schedule for all the Major League teams by hand. How hard is that?
I mean, that is the definition of painstaking.
Oh, because you have to have a calendar for every team. And then you are also doing the exact same thing I was saying earlier, right? Some of these baseball stadiums, they make money on concerts. They make money on other things. So, you know, you can have something that goes on at a baseball stadium, in a certain period of time. You know, very similar to why the Spurs leave for a month, you know, because of the rodeo trip, because their arena is being used. So baseball has these. So you have all these stadiums and you have these calendars, these 6-month calendars that are blocked out for things that are already being scheduled. So we can't play baseball there. So we got to make sure they're on the road. But then when we make sure on the road, how are we making sure they're on the road? Are we going to put them on a 3-game road trip? We're going to put them on a 10-game road trip. When are we going to put the 10-game road trips? When are we going to do that? I would lose my mind. I'd get a computer just to do that and not tell them I had a computer to figure it all out. But one of the things that they talked about in the documentary that I found fascinating when making the schedule was that they always said there's a human element to making a schedule that is lost by computers because computers don't understand sometimes the emotion of the sport that needs to happen. And the best example they gave was that the computer schedule that was generated for the year Mariano Rivera was retiring had him finishing out his career in Houston. And they said that they would have tried to make the schedule so that, A, that his final game was at Yankee Stadium, or if not, at least Fenway Park, right? There's a human element that's, like, missing from that, a computer just can't duplicate. A computer doesn't really realize a player is retiring and you want some emotional, you want to capture that emotion in the right setting in this final game.
Right. I kind of felt the same way with Dwayne Wade finishing out his career in Brooklyn. Like,
yeah,
he had
right?
his final goodbye in Miami, and then the very next night, he still has another game, and it's in Brooklyn. It just felt off.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have humans making the schedule, you could account for that. You can say, listen, I got, you know, Dirk is retiring, Wade is retiring, and this coming year. Well, they didn't know really about Dirk, but still, you could have anticipated that because that was the big story that was going on all season anyway. But you could at least create the circumstance that those things occurred, those things closed out at the end. NFL schedule, it's you know, hey, look, if you get these matchups, you want to capitalize on the matchups, right? If you have a rivalry like the Packers and the Bears, it's great to set that tone, put them in the start of the season for the 100th year of the NFL. Yeah, I'm sure there was the way they did the schedule was let's make sure that's locked in. Let's make sure these other games are locked in these particular dates because we want them. We want, you know, obviously Dallas and Detroit to play on Thanksgiving, and there's this other game. These are the teams that are playing in London at a particular time. But, man, making schedules is really difficult.
Ooh. This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio on SB Nation AM. Cruising right along, getting ready for the draft next week. I love April. It's been a good month, hasn't it? What a bunch of good stories that we've had so far this month. Right, Virginia winning the national championship and the storyline of that team winning after losing to a 16 and Tiger Woods winning the Masters. What could be equal of the draft? I think it could be, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some story in the draft that would equal that kind of storyline where the draft comes out and we're like, oh my goodness. Maybe the Raiders moving up to draft one. I don't know. I'm trying to think. Kyler Murray going number one seems to be a lock. Like, people are now just sort of going, eh, okay. You're still hearing rumblings like maybe Nick Bosa, but I don't know. Kyler Murray's impressive enough. But I'm looking forward to it next week. I like the draft. I just am curious on a couple of teams. That's all. Dave Gettleman of the New York Giants said that, you know, it's going to be best player available and not necessarily need. Look, it goes back to that same old debate, right? You're going to take, if you're on the board and you need offensive linemen and you don't need wide receiver, why would you take a wide receiver even if they were the best on the board? Right? The Giants are picking in the top 10. The Giants need some help in a number of different areas. But the one area that I think Giant fans would like to see taken care of is quarterback. Because it's very likely Eli's last chance. Now, I do not think the Giants take a quarterback at six. You've heard me say this before. I don't think the Giants will put a high-profile pick at quarterback in this draft to go and back up Eli. Because I think they're playing a game where they can find their quarterback at another time. If Eli Manning struggles, you don't want the ending of that career to be being benched forever. Right? You don't have to look far in the Manning family to find that possibility could have existed. Right? Think about the Denver Broncos in the year they made their Super Bowl run. Think about that year Peyton Manning was having, where he wasn't throwing the ball really well. And he was dealing with some injuries. And he got, and he was playing, I think it was against Kansas City, and he played terrible. He was throwing picks. The ball was wobbly. And you could tell something was right and wasn't wrong. And Brock Osweiler came in. And Osweiler won, you know, games, you know, against, I think it was the Patriots. He won games at home against the Bears. Came back in a game against the Steelers. But Osweiler was starting to show that he could move the Denver Bronco offense. It had a certain look. He made the cover of Sports Illustrated. People were kind of buzzing about him. And then Osweiler went into the game against the LA Chargers, or San Diego Chargers at the time, and he was throwing interceptions. Even though they weren't his fault, he was throwing interceptions, and they needed a spark offensively. So Gary Kubiak brought back in Peyton Manning. And Manning, even though he wasn't whipping the ball around, he was able to get the Broncos a victory in that game and got them the number one seed in the playoffs with that victory, and then kept the job all the way through, beating you know the Patriots, the Steelers, and then eventually the Carolina Panthers in the Super Bowl. But think if Osweiler had not played bad, if he had not thrown interceptions. Let's say he came out against the Chargers and was throwing through three touchdowns with no picks and completed, you know, 80% of his passes. Would the Broncos have turned to an aging Peyton Manning who was not getting the job done during the regular season to guide them en route to the Super Bowl? Or do you keep the guy in there that's doing well and keeping the ship afloat and has done a remarkable job? Granted, I think that would have been a conversation, but at the same time, that's how Peyton Manning's career could have ended. I mean, by being benched for Brock Osweiler and never seeing the field again. Is Eli going to have that fate if they drafted Drew Lock? So if I'm Gettleman, listen, it's all about smoke screen this time of year. We all know that, right? Teams will say they're interested in this guy, interested in that guy, or they're interested in need, or they're interested in best player available, whatever. You don't know until that card is in what they're thinking or where they're going. That's the game all these teams are going to play. The only team that doesn't have to play a game with who they're taking is Arizona. Arizona could say right now who they want to take. No one's ahead of them. No one can beat them to the punch. They could absolutely get out there in front of it and say, we're taking Kyler Murray. They don't want to. The league doesn't want them to do that because the league wants to make us a TV show. And the TV, it's like the Academy Awards. You know, you don't see people tweeting about the Academy Awards with inside information on who's going to win Best Picture. Because they know it's valuable to the Oscars that that remains a secret until the envelope is opened. And the NFL wants very badly for their night on that Thursday to be on that same level. They don't want early reports indicate or early reports are talking that they're talking with. No, they want it to be a shock and surprise, and they want you to watch it like you watch the Academy Awards. But nevertheless, there's no team on the board that has to be coy about where they're going with their pick except outside of Arizona. They don't have to. But if you're the Jets, you might throw some smokescreen out there. The Giants and the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Buffalo Bills and the Denver Broncos. So you could send out all sorts of signals as to where you're going. Maybe get somebody to bite on a potential trade to move up or down in the draft. Maybe you like the Hawkinson kid out of Iowa. Maybe you like him as tight end, but you're the Denver Broncos, for example, and 10 is a too high of a place for you to take him. So you want to move down in the draft. Maybe make a deal with the Dolphins or something, right? This is all on the table. These are all possibilities. So, but I'm going to take Gettleman at his word here when he's talking about best player versus need. But this is the time to really look at your needs, because your needs are where you get them fixed in the draft. If you don't need a running back and he's the best player on your board, take the best offensive lineman on the board or trade down for a team that wants a running back. If you don't need a quarterback, trade with somebody who does or pick somebody on your board. I never buy the whole best player available, because if the best player is somebody that you're not going to use, why bother? Just because he's the best player on the board doesn't mean he'd be the best player on your team. Right? And so when I understand some of these guys are so freakish athletically that it would be hard to not take them and find room for them. I'm really high on Devin White. Really, really high on the LSU linebacker Devin White. I think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to be a multiple Pro Bowler. I think he's a great addition for anybody that needs a good, strong linebacker that's got speed, that can cover backs out of the backfield, can cover a tight end, and also can get back and forth very quickly, maybe be a great inside linebacker. I'm very big on Devin White. Okay, let's say a team doesn't need that. Let's say a team is fine defensively. Could they use them? Of course, because we can all use depth. But their offensive line is so porous, it drives the fan base crazy. Then take Jonah Williams or take somebody else that's on the offensive line. Even if Devin White is on your board as the most athletic player, if you need a tackle or a guard on your offensive line that can step in right away and help keep your quarterback from you know, getting crushed to the ground, that's where you go. If a team tells me they're taking the best player on the board, I'm okay with that. Give me depth, that's fine. But you also better make sure you answer some needs, right? If you're the Texans, for example, go with somebody in the secondary, if that's where your needs are. You know, Denver is a perfect example, a team I'm more close to because I follow them a little bit more closely than other teams. They lost Brandon Marshall. They need a linebacker. I'm big on Devin White. If he's not available at 10, take Devin Bush. If he's not available, then trade down and get a tight end. These are needs, not best player on the board. These are needs. And no, I don't want them drafting Drew Lock. And no, I would not want them drafting any quarterback, even if it's Dwayne Haskins, despite what Von Miller says. Because I don't think the Broncos right now need a quarterback. Look at the next year's crop. Find somebody that can impact your team now if you feel you're on the cusp. Right? The Giants could take a quarterback at 6, and everybody would be okay with it, because everybody knows the Giants need a quarterback. But whether they trade for Josh Rosen or get Dwayne Haskins or Drew Lock or anybody else, you know the ending for Eli Manning is going to be written in ink. He's not going to finish the season. That team is too deficient in other areas that Eli is not going to be able to propel them to an 11-win season or a 10-win season. When it gets rough, when it gets awful, he's going to get benched for one of these guys, and that's going to be it. And that's how you're going to write the ending of a two-time Super Bowl champion, a quarterback. It's SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Oh, finally. Oh, St. John's has got their basketball coach. Oh, my God, I was sweating that one. It looks like it's going to be Mike Anderson, former Arkansas basketball coach, is going to take the reins of the St. John Red Storm after they parted ways with Chris Mullen. Good luck. They could not get it. Why can't these schools get these basketball coaches? Like, why couldn't UCLA get who they wanted? And now all of a sudden, St. John's, like, they couldn't find their guy. They went around. They were trying to get everybody. They were trying to get Bobby Hurley. Nah, he's going to stay in Tempe. And he's a New York guy. Bobby Hurley is a New York guy. I think he grew up in Jersey City, right across the bridge, or right across the tunnel, I should say. They preferred Porter Moser of Loyola Chicago. He turned it down. Iona's coach turned it down. Nobody wants to go coach in the city. I mean, St. John's was a. Remember when St. John's was a good deal? I don't know how old you are, Jacob, but St. John's with Luke Carnesecca, that used to be a good gig. That used to be a gig you'd want to have. Now they can't get anybody.
I'll have to take your word for it.
All right, I will. I know I'm dating myself when I talk about the old Big East with Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, Syracuse.
Those are old some Big blue East. Bloods, man.
I mean, my goodness.
Some Big East.
I used to come home from
schools
school.
Don't like each other.
I used to watch Big East basketball. I used to come home from school. I used to hang out, wait till the night, watch Big East basketball like Mondays and stuff. I loved it. Love Big East basketball. Now St. John's can't find a coach. Mike Anderson's a good coach, too. Arkansas let him go. There was some frustration there. He couldn't get the Razorbacks to another level. He was there 8 years. But, like, St. John's is one thing. UCLA not being able to land the guy they really wanted or the guys they really wanted is a little silly. Like, you're UCLA. I talked about this with Rick Barnes. Barnes in Tennessee said that if they had paid them a couple, like $5 million buyout, he would have gone. I was really blown away by that because I thought you don't want to be embarrassed if you're a school, you pay the buyout. Like it's worse. What's worse, paying out a $5 million buyout or being rejected by a guy who'd rather stay at Tennessee to be the head coach rather than your school? Like, you know, again, Tennessee, SEC basketball, fine place to live, great state. I live in the state. I love it. But UCLA is one of the more iconic programs in college sports. UCLA basketball is one of the more iconic programs in all of college sports. And if you're a school, you can't afford to have the public rejection. So you pay the $5 million, which for UCLA basketball, I think would be nothing. I don't think it would be much of a hurdle at all. Just pay it and just, you know, call it a day. But I don't know. Maybe the business side of it prevailed. Maybe somebody said, nah, listen, this is just money you're going to give away. And you don't want to do it. You don't know. It's not worth it. The cost, if he comes here and he doesn't do that well, we're out $5 million plus his salary because we're going to bump his salary. And we don't, you know, you don't want to have that much money tied into a coach. We're not 100% sure can take our team to the next level. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, but at the same time, getting publicly turned down for jobs. I remember telling you guys one time when Florida was looking for a coach to replace Steve Spurrier, they made three trips, right? They made a trip to Oklahoma to talk to Bob Stoops about it. They actually went to Denver to talk to Mike Shanahan about it for the Broncos, trying to get him back to the college game. But when those two guys turned it down, they only made one more trip, and that was to a guy they knew would say yes, and that was to Ron Zook, who was in New Orleans at the time. Like, you're a school, you cannot afford to have people over and over and over again telling you no. You do not want the public perception that your job, that job is not worthy of leaving a program for another job. Alumni want you to have the best program and want you to be perceived as having the best program. St. John's not being able to find a coach until Mike Anderson? Yikes.